When you were a kid, did you want to be an astronaut? A crossing guard? Sometimes our dreams feel a little all over the place, but we're not alone. In fact, McDonald's created an education platform, APA Next, with all the resources Asian Pacific American students like us need to navigate the next steps, or even figure out what they are. With streaming workshops on college admissions and more, a lot of the work is done for us. Come take a look at apanext.com and decide what's next for you.
Business today looks nothing like it did yesterday. While it's more unpredictable, its possibilities are endless. At ADP, turning unpredictability into an advantage is what we do. Using data-driven insights, we design HR solutions to help businesses work better, smarter, so they can think beyond today and find even more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.
Everybody, I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of the League Wraparound. This is the show that gets you caught up on anything and everything happening around the National Football League. Coming up on this edition of the program, have an interview with Casey Vallier. Casey is the coordinator of radio production and in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. We recap the Colts game against the Denver Broncos, discuss the Colts offense and defense. Also, we discuss quarterback Matt Ryan, also head coach Frank Reich. Also, the Colts' next game against the Jacksonville Jaguars and more, plus a preview of Week 6 and Week 6's game pick. So Casey's going to be on the program. Solid interview with him. Can't wait for that. Before we get to the scores from the most important games in the NFL, we have an update on the situation involving Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Davante Adams. For those that may have been living under a rock, after the Raiders lost to the Kansas City Chiefs this past Monday on Monday Night Football, the final score was Kansas City 30, Las Vegas 29. As the Raiders were headed back to the locker room area, Adams had shoved a freelance employee who happened to be working for NBC's Monday Night Football. Now, for those that haven't seen the video, it's been circulating all over social media. But what happened was, in the video, there were the Raiders at the end of the game visibly upset. And they were, as they were headed back to the locker room area, there was a freelance worker that happened to be working for ESPN's Monday Night Football. I guess he walks in front of Davante slightly, and Davante shoves him, and he's slow to get up. He has his equipment in his hand, and now the gentleman was but Davante, as a result of the incident, was charged with a misdemeanor assault. So there's a lot I have to say about this. First of all, Davante clearly wrong in his actions. And he said that in his post-game comments that he was sorry that he shoved this person. And, you know, he accepts full responsibility and holds himself accountable for this situation. Now, however, this could be a situation where the freelance employee may have seen it as a money grab. Maybe he may have done it as a situation where he could get money out of the situation, and now he's filed this lawsuit against Davante and accusing and charging him with misdemeanor assault. Bottom line is this: you have to be held accountable for your actions, and Davante, clearly the person responsible for his wrongdoing in this issue. And I hope the NFL as well as the Las Vegas Raiders can try to get to the bottom of this. I know they have much bigger concerns, of course, with the concussion policy and what happened less than 2 weeks ago with Tua Tagovailoa. And what about Chiefs security? I mean, should have Chiefs security done their job and waited for this gentleman to pass through, the employee to pass through first, and then for the Raiders to go back to their locker room respectfully after how intense this game was? There's a lot of questions that could go around, but bottom line is this: is that Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Davante Adams has been charged with misdemeanor assault, and this is going to be an interesting situation going forward. But bottom line is this: players, athletes, or anyone that is high profile and multimillionaires know, no matter the situation, good, bad, right, wrong, ugly, indifferent. You must keep your hands to yourself. And again, the employee that happened to be doing freelance work for ESPN's Monday Night Football was looked like he was headed to the other side of the the tunnel where the Raiders were headed to the locker room, and he just happened to get caught in Devontae's way, and Devontae just shoved him. So, man, this is definitely a weird turn of a lot of turn of events that have happened in that Monday night game, of course, with the Devontae situation, of course, the roughing the passer situation, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So, again, Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Devontae Adams has been charged with misdemeanor assault after shoving a credentialed media worker after Monday night's loss in Kansas City to the Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, Adams was cited for an intentional overt act that inflicted bodily injury. And the man that was shoved by Adams is identified as Ryan Zebley, and he claims that Zebley has suffered whiplash, a headache, and a possible concussion from the incident. Zebley, again, was doing freelance photography work for ESPN's Monday Night Football. And again, this is an unfortunate situation, but you always have to remember athletes, not just athletes, but just any high-profile people that are involved in the public eye, you have to remember that the cards are always stacked against you. Remember, good, bad, right, wrong, ugly, whatever the case may be. And hopefully the Raiders and the NFL can just get to the bottom of this and or maybe some type of settlement. But this is just a strange turn of events that has happened in this situation. All right, let's get you now to the scores from the most important games from Week 5 in the National Football League. Let's start off with the Thursday night game between the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos, a very ugly game, but it wound up going to overtime. The Colts beat the Broncos 12-9. In the part of the NFL International Series in London between the New York Giants and the Green Bay Packers, the Giants beat the Packers 27-22. The Pittsburgh Steelers took on the Buffalo Bills. It was all Buffalo. Bills would win 38-3. The Miami Dolphins took on the New York Jets. It was all Jets. The Jets flew high over the Dolphins, 40-17. The Philadelphia Eagles squared off against the Arizona Cardinals. Eagles continue to fly high. They remain undefeated. The Eagles would win 20-17. The Dallas Cowboys went out to the West Coast in Inglewood, California to take on the Los Angeles Rams. Dallas holds off thanks to the defense and solid quarterback play of Cooper Rush and the running game led by Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. Cowboys win 22-10. Sunday night football saw AFC North rivals Cincinnati Bengals going up against the Baltimore Ravens. Justin Tucker, his field goals were automatic for Baltimore as they beat the Bengals 19-17. Monday night football, what a wild one it was between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs. The Raiders would go on to beat the Chiefs would go on to beat the Raiders 30-29. Including multiple touchdown catches by tight end Travis Kelce. Again, the final score, Kansas City 30, Las Vegas 29. And those are the most important, those are the scores from the most important games from Week 5 in the NFL. All right, now for my top three storylines. I want to circle back to the Monday night game between the Raiders and the Chiefs. If you watch that game in the first half, Kansas City Chiefs defensive end Chris Jones had a strip sack and then later a fumble recovery, giving Kansas City the ball in Raider territory, giving them a possible opportunity to score another touchdown. Well, according to the lead official in that game, the Kansas City was charged with the roughing the passer penalty, and the getting the penalty was charged to number 95, Chris Jones. Now, Carl Cheffers was the official for this game. And at watching this game, I was very confused because according to the ref, he says that when the ball was stripped from the quarterback, the official claimed that Jones had put all of his body weight on Derek Carr as the quarterback was going to the ground. Now, I didn't see that happening. I mean, yeah, it happened in real time. It was one of those bang-bang plays. But come on, you can clearly see that Jones, after he sacked Carr, he stripped the ball from him. He got up off of Carr as quickly as he could to recover, the ball, it would have been it was a forced fumble and a fumble recovery, ball belonging to Kansas City. And it makes you wonder sometimes, like, how should defense be played in today's NFL? We understand that it's a quarterback's league. We understand that everything is set to make the game safe. I am definitely for all of that, but come on. Anybody that watched that game could clearly see that was not Chris Jones. He sacked Derek Carr, and he wound up stripping the ball from him, and as soon as the ball was loose, he got up off of him just in enough time to recover the ball, and it was ruled a fumble recovery. Jones was down, clearly in Raider territory. Ball belongs to Kansas City. The official Carl Cheffers didn't see it that way. Instead, he ruled it a roughing the passer penalty on Kansas City. I don't know what gives in today's NFL in terms of what is considered to be great defense and bad defense. I just don't know what to make of this. I don't know what the situation is on this, but the bottom line is this. That was not a roughing the passer penalty. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, he didn't lunge into Carr. He didn't drive. He didn't take his body weight and drive the quarterback into the ground as what the official had said. But nevertheless, it was a roughing the passer penalty. I mean, Kansas City would win on Monday night. But, man, had they lost that game, people would have went right back to that call and said, remember the rougher and fell? I don't know what would constitute, again, as I mentioned earlier, great defense or bad defense. We don't know, but stay tuned because I'm pretty sure the Players Association with the competition committee is going to have more to say about this. My next storyline is going to be the Colts-Broncos Thursday night game. I tell you one thing, with Thursday night football being on Amazon Prime and paying for a subscription, for anybody that does not have a current subscription to Amazon Prime for Thursday night football, you didn't miss anything because this game was ugly, downtrodden, bad, horrific, horrendous. I mean, no effort, none whatsoever from really both teams. 12-9, the Colts would win in overtime. And I watched this game from start to finish, and it was just bad. It was just bad. I mean, defensively, a great game. But when you have two teams that have future Hall of Fame quarterbacks with Matt Ryan and Russell Wilson, you always want to expect the best. Not only do you expect the best from those two gentlemen, but you expect the best out of the Colts and the Broncos that have had a rivalry for many decades. And then also, too, you also expect this to be, I mean, after all, this is Thursday Night Football's first time being on Amazon Prime, so you want to present a great product out on the field. This was not a great product at all, and a lot of people voiced their frustration on social media saying that this is dead. It was anemic. Both teams didn't even try. I was looking at Russell Wilson and that Broncos offense. It was like they really didn't get hot at all for really much of the game, with the exception of maybe the last few minutes in that fourth quarter and then going into the overtime period before the stop happened in overtime, giving the Colts the victory. But I don't know if Amazon Prime wants to entice people into paying for that subscription package, they got to have a better product. The product has got to be better. I know Jeff Bezos is the big-time billionaire with Amazon, and I know he's probably looking at this saying, this product has got to get better. And hopefully it will be better for the next game with Washington going up against Chicago. But if you had a chance to watch the Colts-Broncos game last Thursday night, or better yet, if you didn't get an opportunity to watch the Colts-Broncos Thursday night game because you didn't have Amazon Prime, don't worry about it because you didn't miss anything. And for my last storyline is going to be Justin Tucker. The late, great John Madden once said, kickers are people too. And certainly Justin Tucker is a person as well. Justin Tucker is the NFL's most accurate place kicker at 91.3%. And he also holds the NFL record for the longest field goal ever kicked at 66 yards. Tucker has been a valuable asset to the Baltimore Ravens since entering the NFL in 2012. He's won a Super Bowl. He's also led the league on a couple of occasions in field goals made. And also field goals made and also field goal attempts. Justin Tucker had a kick. I mean, if you are a fan of kicking, and I'm not going to lie to you, I've been a fan of field goal kicking and kickers for a long time, as long as I've been watching the NFL. Justin Tucker came in and did what he was supposed to do, put on a kicking clinic. And that's what happens, you know, when you have Lamar Jackson, who's a dynamic quarterback, and, you know, the Ravens offense, some days they have it, some days they don't. And that's why a valuable field goal kicker comes into play. And when you have Justin Tucker, man, the world is indeed your oyster. Justin kicked four field goals, including the game winner, this past Sunday night on Sunday Night Football, beating the AFC North rival Cincinnati Bengals. Think of the likes of Adam Vinatieri, also Morten Andersen, Jan Stenerud. Can't forget about Gary Anderson. The Barr brothers, Matt Barr, Chris Barr, just to name a few. And Justin Tucker is definitely the one that's definitely going to be top tier, a future first ballot Hall of Famer. And I know people always say, well, kickers, they don't get their jerseys dirty. Yeah, sometimes they don't get their jerseys that dirty. But guess what? When the game is on the line, and especially when it's the postseason, you got to have a valuable field goal kicker. And that's where Justin Tucker, he's been doing it for so long in Baltimore, highly respected, not just amongst his teammates, but highly respected amongst the NFL. So big ups to Justin Tucker for having an effective game against the Cincinnati Bengals, winning in a close one 19-17. And as John Madden once said, kickers are people too. And Justin Tucker is that person that is highly respected. All right, when we come back from the break, I have an interview with Casey Vallier. Casey is the coordinator of radio production and an in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. We recap the Colts game against the Denver Broncos. We discuss the Colts offense and defense. We also discuss quarterback Matt Ryan, head coach Frank Reich, also the Colts' next game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and more. Casey is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to The League Wraparound.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org. So, darling, you're not a millionaire. If you want to retire at St. James Place in Baton Rouge, well, you don't have to be to live the active, enriching, and fun retirement you've planned and saved for. So forget what you've heard and take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more and schedule a visit at stjamesplaceinfo.org. That's stjamesplaceinfo.org. Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org. Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
The It's Always the Right Time deal.
Hey, want to go to Mickey D's for lunch?
Ooh, let's go now.
But it's not lunchtime yet.
If we're going to McDonald's, it's always the right time.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that.
There's a deal for every lunch hour at McDonald's.
Now, get a hot and spicy McChicken, double cheeseburger, or six-piece chicken McNuggets with small fries for only $3. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
So, darling, you're not a millionaire. If you want to retire at St. James Place in Baton Rouge, well, you don't have to be to live the active, enriching, and fun retirement you've planned and saved for. So forget what you've heard and take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more and schedule a visit at stjamesplaceinfo.org. That's stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Women's Cancer Pavilion specializes in the treatment of breast and gynecologic cancers, working together with Mary Bird Perkins and Our Lady of the Lake Health and the region's leading providers to deliver the best possible outcome is at the heart of everything we do. From innovative surgical techniques to the most advanced treatment options, we don't stop until we've examined every possibility and answered every question. Because walking with women through every step of their cancer journey is what we do all day, every day at Women's Cancer Pavilion.
Play action. Time. Wide open. Inside the 30 goes Jerry Jeudy. Gilmore's on Sutton this time. Keep it on the ground and getting spilled.
Over a lot of people thought he should roll out.
Yeah.
You know what happened. Fourth and one.
Surveys. Good protection. Slides. Fires. Broken up in the end zone. Gilmore on Sutton. So the defensive player of the year a couple of years back, and somehow, some way, the Indianapolis Colts, who took their first lead of the game on that field goal, pull out a 12-9 victory.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of Amazon Prime's Thursday Night Football coverage with Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on the call. That was from the Thursday Night Football game between the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos from October the 6th. Of 2022. And of course, quarterback for the Denver Broncos, Russell Wilson, had his pass batted down by Colts defensive back Stephon Gilmore, giving the Colts a 12-9 victory in overtime. To talk more about that game, we want to welcome him to the program. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts radio network, Casey Vallier. Casey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Thursday Night Football between the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos. There were a lot of one-word answers to describe this game. I'll leave it up to you, Casey. Give me your takeaways from the Colts-Broncos game.
Well, since I'm an employee of the Colts, I'll say a win is a win, right? But there was a lot that went into it. You know, it's funny when you look back and you see all the statistics and everything from it. I mean, it was everything that everybody thought it was. It was a pretty ugly football game. But within that, there were a handful of bright spots. I thought the Colts defense looked pretty well. Kicker Chase McLaughlin, who the Colts signed in week two, he looked really well. But still concerns about the Colts offense for sure. They've struggled through 5 weeks. They haven't scored over 20 points. So there's a handful of negative stuff that you want to improve on. But at the end of the day, in the game of football, when they look back at the schedule and what the record looks like, a win is a win.
Absolutely. And you said it, a win is a win, and the Colts will take it any way they can get it. And let's talk more about this game for a moment. I want to talk about Philip Lindsay. Philip, of course, we know about Philip beginning his career with the Denver Broncos, had a short stint with the Houston Texans, and Philip wanted to show off his skills coming back home to Denver. He had 11 carries for 40 yards, and he also had 3 catches for 14 yards. Just give me your thoughts on Philip's play against his former team, the Broncos.
No, I think that's a great point. I thought, you know, there was a lot of, you know, going into the game without Jonathan Taylor, and then Nyheim Hines gets hurt in that opening series for the Colts offense. You know, there's going to be some guys that need to step up. But Philip Lindsay was a guy that throughout all of training camp, I would say if you ask the majority of the people in the Indianapolis contingent, they were a little surprised at the fact that he didn't make that initial 53-man roster. In large part, I think it was because you knew you had Jonathan Taylor at the 1, Nyheim Hines at the 2, and just as far as, you know, carry load was going to be, Philip Lindsay just wasn't going to get any, because if you look at who the Colts' third running back is on their active roster, currently it's Deion Jackson, and prior to Thursday's game, he had just 1 carry through the first 5 weeks. So I think that was in large part what we were expecting, on the reason that we didn't see Philip Lindsay make that initial roster. But he's a guy who was a hard runner. He was, you know, one of the bright spots I thought throughout of all of training camp. So we weren't at all – I'm not necessarily say I was surprised at the way that he played, but talking to him leading up to it, I mean, Denver is home. That's where his wife and his kids live still. So he was able to have, you know, a lot of his family out there. And I think there was probably a little added emotion about playing a team that essentially said, hey, we're going to move on. And I think that was, you know, maybe a chip on his shoulder. We look at all these NFL players, it seems like they always are looking for additional chips to put on their shoulder. And that was definitely just one more additional for Phillip Lindsay. And I think it was great for him just to show that all the hard work and dedication you put in. It's tough in the game right now for running backs because everybody claims them, you know, they're a dime a dozen. So a guy like Phillip Lindsay, he's only in his fifth year in the NFL, and he already finds himself on a practice squad. But he showed that when his name is called, he is capable to go out there and be a very productive back. I thought he ran really, really hard. One of the things that, you know, you never put in question was how hard and the effort he was going to put forth. And I think we definitely saw that on Thursday. And it's a lot of, you know, for Colts fans, it was definitely a positive when you looked at it, because you go into the game without Jonathan Taylor, you expect not a very big running performance. And the team was actually able to rush over 100 yards, just a second time this year. They've done it in a very stagnant rush offense to this point. So there definitely was a bright spot with Phillip Lindsay for sure.
Indeed. And let's stay with the bright spot. And you mentioned his name in the running attack, Deion Jackson. He had 13 carries for 62 yards. Just give me your thoughts on Deion and his play in this game.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he's one of the guys that we all, throughout the last, you know, year and a half, if you take what we saw last year in preseason in a training camp and then what we saw this year, it's a guy that has definitely made a lot of strides. He looked really, really good last year, you know, a rookie out of Duke, undrafted guy, kind of had a lot to prove, and he made a lot of strides last year, and then all throughout this year, he was a guy that, I mean, he made that initial 53-man roster because there were a lot of things that he did so well, you didn't want to risk somebody else going out and getting him, and I think on Thursday, that's what you saw. You saw the ability that, in a pinch, you can turn to this guy, and he's got a lot of very similarities to Jonathan Taylor, who is the bell cow for the Colts. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, that's pretty high shoes to fill with Jonathan Taylor, you know, the reigning rushing champ. But there's a lot of similarities in the game between Deion Jackson and Jonathan Taylor, and I think you saw that on display. He was a man, he found as many holes as he could find and was able to carve out a very, very productive game on Thursday. And now for the Colts, it's going to be interesting to kind of see what they do moving forward, because when you put that on tape, it kind of goes, hey, you know, maybe if we need to give Jonathan Taylor a splash, we're pretty comfortable with a guy like Deion Jackson in the backfield.
All right, I want to move along now to the receiving side of the ball. And we had Alec Pierce was the leading receiver for the Colts, 8 catches for 81 yards. Give me your thoughts on Alec and his play in this contest.
Yeah, no, I think Alec continues to make big strides. There were, you know, a lot of expectations, very lofty expectations for him. You come into the year with Michael Pittman as the clear-cut number one, and then you take a guy in the second round, you just assume he can slide in and be, you know, a pretty predominant feature in the offense. And in week one, he was held catchless, suffered a concussion, so he missed week two. So you kind of head into week three with the guy in the second round who's yet to catch a pass. Everybody's kind of like, oh, what do you have in this? And he's really made a really good stride the last couple weeks. And I think last week you really saw the evolution between the relationship between he and Matt Ryan, which is going to be so key moving forward. Because for quarterbacks, especially right now what the Colts are dealing with, which is, you know, kind of uncharted waters, they've had an offensive line that's typically near the top of the NFL, and this year it's struggled. So Matt Ryan's having to get rid of the football a little faster than what he probably wants to, and having an extra security blanket in a guy like Alec Pierce is so vital. I mean, he had 8 catches on Thursday, which is it's just the 4th rookie in franchise history to have 8 receptions in a Colts uniform. So very impressive day on last Thursday, and I'm just anticipating to see the continual growth of Alec Pierce. And, you know, if Michael Pittman continues to be the number one, Alec Pierce being his sidekick, that can be a really good duo moving forward through the rest of 2022 for sure.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about the continued growth of Alec Pierce. We're seeing the continued growth of Michael Pittman Jr. Of course, he comes from NFL royalty where his dad was a running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where Jr. handled his business in the Broncos game last Thursday night with 5 catches for 59 yards. Give me your thoughts on Michael and his play in this game.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that he's just so steady. You just know what you have, and, you know, he may not be, when you look at, you know, NFL receivers around the league that are your clear-cut number ones, your Justin Jeffersons, your Jamar Chases, your Cooper Cups, these guys that, you know, you look at their stat line, it's, you know, 10 catches for 180 yards and two touchdowns. Michael Pittman might have a couple games like that, but one of the things I think that is so pivotal to his growth within this offense is he knows what he's needed to do. He doesn't try to do too much, and he really is a guy that if you look at the amount of first downs, that's where I kind of draw my, you know, how well is Michael Pittman playing, is how many times he's making first downs. Not necessarily, you know, the big plays, but, you know, third and seven, if you can get 9 yards, it's so key to keep drives alive, and it gives you multiple options, and that is what Michael Pittman has done. And he, I mean, on Thursday, I'm sure you look at that stat line and it's not flashy, but if you look at the times that those catches came, they were in pivotal moments that set up the Colts to continue their drives in order to get that 12-9 victory. And that's what Michael Pittman has been all year. And that's kind of, I think, what this Colts offense is kind of viewing Michael Pittman, you know, for the next handful of years for sure inside this offense.
Rightfully so. I want to move along now to the other side of the ball. We'll get back to the offense in just a moment, but let's get to the defensive side of the ball. The leading tackler in this game against the Broncos for the Colts was Bobby Okereke. He was the leading tackler with 6 tackles. Give me your thoughts on Bobby and his play in this game.
Bobby has been, he is very similar to the way that Michael Pittman is. He is just steady. And I know that sounds very cliche and all that, but that's one of the things that you put Bobby out there and you don't worry, because Bobby knows where he needs to be. He's got the athletic traits to put him in situations that maybe not all linebackers can be in. And Bobby is just one of those guys that every time his number is called, you look at him. The thing that I love about Bobby is you don't ever see any missed tackles. Now, here I am knocking on wood, hoping that doesn't, you know, bite me. But Bobby Okereke is just as sure of a tackler as this team has. And then his counterpart, a guy who's, you know, currently tied for the league lead in tackles, and Zaire Franklin, who's kind of stepping in for Shaquille Leonard. Both of those guys have just been so steady, and you don't worry about the linebacking play, which is such a key spot in that defense, because, I mean, you're one of the generals. You're out there, you're calling plays, you're doing all of this, and to know that you don't have to worry, you got that security blanket of these guys are going to be where they need to be every moment they need to be. They aren't going to miss tackles. In the open field, they're going to be able to stop a guy from getting, you know, an extra 5 or 6 yards to get a first down. They're there to knock that down. And that's one of the things that we've seen definitely out of Bobby over the last couple of years with him. And then this year with Zaire Franklin, he has taken a huge step in his growth.
All right. I want to talk now about a couple of players that made big strides on the defensive side. Zaire Franklin, Isaiah Rogers, and Kenny Moore II. They all had 5 tackles in this game. Give me your thoughts on their performance against the Broncos.
Yeah, no. I mean, you're hitting the nail right on the head. There's been a handful of guys that have made key plays in key moments. And you look at the play that Isaiah Rogers, he's the guy that, you know, the first couple weeks had 0 defensive snaps. It was almost that Brandon Faison had won the 3rd cornerback job inside this new Gus Bradley defense. And Isaiah Rogers is a very good returner as a kick returner. So he was mainly special teams, but he started to see his game inserted a little bit more. And I think one of the key things that kind of made his growth continue to grow, we saw last week in the game against Tennessee, he was able to stop Derrick Henry from getting to the corner on the outside and eliminate him from, you know, making a big gain. And it was one of those things that in the open field to tackle Derrick Henry, there's something about Isaiah Rogers. And there's just one thing, you look at, you mean, 5 tackles, all that, but he just finds a knack for finding the football. And Isaiah Rogers is a guy that it's very, very hard to keep him off the field. And we saw that on Thursday. And then Kenny Moore is probably the best nickel in the game. And when he is out there, he can lock down anybody who he's squared against. And it's funny because Kenny Moore stands every bit of 5'8". You know, he's a small guy. He's got good length, but he is one of those guys. He plays so much bigger than what you see. And he is just about as good of a corner as you'll find in this league.
All right. I want to talk now about someone that has been wreaking havoc on quarterbacks for quite a while now, and that's Yannick Ngakoue. He had a 0.5 sack in the game against Denver. Just give me your thoughts on his play against the Broncos.
Yeah, so Yannick Ngakoue is one of those guys that everybody knows. When you look at the sexy category on the defensive side of the ball, it's all about what you can do, getting after the passer, and Yannick Ngakoue has been a guy who has shown throughout his career he's had at least 8.5 sacks in every year. And it looks like he's on his way to getting that this year. He has had, you know, a bit of a slower start to what Colts fans were anticipating. But if you go back to the game against the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, he was able to get his first sack in that game. And then the game against Russell Wilson, he kind of came out to play as well in that game. So it's one of those things that he's definitely been there in the big moments. And we saw that again on Thursday, another half sack. He had a tackle for loss. That's one of the things that Yannick Ngakoue, he is able to put his mark on games when it's pivotal, and those moments, they both came on third downs, and that is so key because he was able to get the offense off the field and get the Colts offense back on. So that is one of the things about Yannick. It's not sacks that come on first down that are a two-yard loss and they end up converting. It's in the big plays when you need a stop, Yannick Ngakoue, his number's been called.
All right, and I want to talk now about two defensive backs that came up huge in this game, Stephon Gilmore and Rodney Thomas. Rodney came up big with an interception just before the end of regulation. And, of course, Stephon got an interception as well and was responsible for the stop to end the overtime period, giving the Colts the victory. Rodney is on the come up, and we know about Stephon's pedigree, winning several Super Bowls with the New England Patriots and being a defensive player of the year. Give me your thoughts on Stephon and Rodney in this game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Stephon Gilmore is one of those guys. He's as advertised. You want to pay the top-tier corner to make plays when it matters, and he was able to have the interception late in the game that set the Colts up for another offensive drive. And then final play of the game, they try to dial up their number one receiver, and the Colts' number one corner steps in with a big pass defense to seal the game. That is what Stephon Gilmore is. That's what he's been throughout his career. There were, you know, it was interesting seeing, you know, what you were expecting for him this year. He's coming off a couple of years where he's had, you know, some injury concerns. But as you mentioned, he was the defensive player of the year in 2019. So just a couple of years removed. And he looks healthy. He's played every snap. He looks like a guy that looks well on his way to be in that Pro Bowl consideration, top-tier corner in the league. Stephon Gilmore has continued to do that. And then you mentioned Rodney Thomas. Rodney Thomas might be one of the best-kept secrets that people maybe aren't talking about on a national level, because Rodney Thomas was a seventh-round pick out of Yale this year, a guy who played corner, was making the transition into safety, hadn't played too much of that, and the Colts actually traded up to get Nick Cross in the third round, who was a safety, who played as a rookie, or it is in his first professional game, started. He's kind of dwindled his playing time, and the guy that slid in has been Rodney Thomas, and he has been just as solid as you can find. I mean, he had a pick in the game on Thursday and play where Russell Wilson threw one up deep, and Rodney Thomas got tripped up by the back judge, and I'm not too certain that if he wouldn't have been tripped up with the official, he wouldn't have had a chance to get a second interception in that game. So Rodney Thomas has played very, very well. There were very low expectations. Seventh-round pick, you know, you're just lucky to make the team in some instances. And Yale, not necessarily known as a powerhouse football program. So Rodney Thomas has definitely opened some eyeballs here in Indianapolis, and he's played about as well as you could in his, you know, his very minimal games to this point. And you Colts are waiting for Julian Blackman to get back off injury. But right now, the way that he and Roddy McLeod are playing on that back end, you're definitely feeling very, very good about what you have in the secondary.
Absolutely. And I know the Colts have felt very good about what they have on the defensive line since DeForest Buckner arrived from San Francisco in the trade. And he wreaked havoc on Russell Wilson in the game against the Broncos. He had two sacks. Give me your thoughts on DeForest and his play.
Yeah, no, DeForest, he was due. It was one of those things. The first couple weeks, he was dealing with a couple injuries. It was a back injury, and then he had an elbow. And the elbow injury he still has, and he's wearing a giant people are calling it the Barry Bonds, what Barry Bonds used to wear when he was hitting, kind of a big elbow brace. But I think from him it was finally getting comfortable with the injury front and being able to fight through it, and we saw it come to fruition on Thursday. He hadn't had a sack leading up to that game, but he was able to make his mark on the game, a couple sacks. And it's so key having that interior pass rush. I mean, that has been – you know, one of the things we've started to see over the last handful of years with guys like Aaron Donald and Chris Jones, having the interior pass rush, it makes it so difficult on quarterbacks because they wanted to step up in the pocket to get away from those edge rushers. So with DeForest Buckner showing that, you know, he's still got a lot left in the tank, and I'm sure for him it was a good kickstart to the rest of the season. So getting a couple sacks, especially on a guy who he used to see during his Seattle days when he was with the 49ers, of course, and Russell Wilson, I'm sure taking him to the ground felt pretty good twice.
Indeed, it did. And I want to get back to the offensive side for a moment. The offensive line has had their struggles so far in this early part of the NFL season. Ryan Kelly, Quentin Nelson, also Danny Pinter, and Will Fries and Dennis Kelly, just to name a few that make up that offensive line. What has been the problem, in your opinion, Casey, and on how the offensive line and what's gone wrong so far this year?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been trying to figure that out for a handful of weeks. We've seen a lot of shuffling, which, you know, I mean, in the way the offensive line is, you want cohesion. You want to have the same guys out there week in, week out, because it builds that continuity and everybody's on the same page. Well, last week we saw a wholesale change with, you know, it was three different offensive linemen starting on Thursday. Bernard Ryman made his debut, his starting debut at left tackle. That moved Matt Pryor over to right tackle, and it shuffled Braden Smith into right. But when you look at the overall, you know, the play of what we saw on Thursday, there was still a handful of question marks. You mentioned guys like Danny Pinter. He slid in at center because Ryan Kelly was injured, so we're not sure where Ryan Kelly is on his injury front. Will Fries has played some this year. We haven't seen Dennis Kelly just yet because he's been working back through a knee injury, but he's also a name that we've been, you know, we've been hearing the last couple of weeks that he's starting to get healthy. So I think right now it's hard to pinpoint the one issue that is this offensive line has struggled with. But it has been definitely an eye-opening thing, because this team, they were an offensive line that a couple years ago was number one with just 18 sacks allowed all year. And here they are here in 2022. Matt Ryan's been sacked 21 times. It's tied for last in the league. So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of, you know, trying to figure out how to get this squad right. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, it's hard because you only have so many positions, you know, so as far as depth goes. So you've got your core guys. They're trying to shuffle them in and see where the right fit is for all these guys. So it's definitely a work in progress. I'm sure something you don't want to be seeing here as we head into week six of the NFL season, still trying to figure out what your best five combination is. But it's definitely a big area that they're trying to shore up. And it's hard because – offensive line play in here in Indianapolis has been really, really good the last handful of years. I mean, Braden Smith, Ryan Kelly, Quentin Nelson, they're all guys who have been Pro Bowlers, you know, over the last just couple years. So it's really something that we're all scratching our head and going, what did we miss? What has happened with this group? They're still working through it, and we'll see what happens on Sunday if they stick with what we saw last Thursday or if they make another change and we still try to see if this carousel can kind of find its footing and go on with five moving forward.
I want to stay just with the offensive line for a moment. The Colts had a different quarterback last year with Carson Wentz, and we know Carson has athletic ability and has a strong arm, whereas Matt Ryan is more of your classic NFL typical pocket passer. Do you think the offensive line is still trying to find their groove in terms of finding a way to adapt to Matt's playing style? And are they still used to having to kind of be upright, whereas they were protecting Carson? Do you think they've had to adjust to those quarterbacks' playing style going from Carson to Matt? Or do you think it's just, like you said, it's just they're still trying to find that cohesive unit?
No, I think that's a great point. I think it is one thing that you can look at. It's, you know, Carson Wentz did extend plays with his athletic ability, and there's a lot to be said that is a different style. So I think that's definitely part of it. I think it's kind of twofold, though, and I think it's also you're still trying to find the best five guys for that cohesion. I think it all starts on the interior of the line, if you ask me. I think there has been a little bit of a learning curve from Ryan Kelly to Matt Ryan. So having that center quarterback combination, I think that is very pivotal if they can figure that out, you know, and just a little bit. I'm not sure. I'm not saying it's not working, but I think there are still some hiccups that are happening there. So I think if they can shore up that part, and then they have had a handful of guys play at right guard. We know what Quentin Nelson is. We know Quentin Nelson is going to be on the left side. You don't have to worry about that. But if they can find that right guard, I think if you get that three playing at the level that they should be playing at, I think it might make the entire offensive line better. It might give Matt Ryan a little bit more time. But I also think that you have to kind of look at it the way that it is and start maybe having a little bit more quicker passes, quicker routes for Ryan right now, because as we've talked about, The offensive line has definitely struggled a little bit to this point. So trying to get the ball out a little quicker, you know, that's the way that we saw Phillip Rivers 2 years ago. He had the ball out real fast. That was a year they led the NFL with the fewest sacks allowed. So if you kind of go back to maybe what you did a couple years ago with Phillip, I think Matt Ryan is a little bit more mobile, a little bit more athleticism than what you saw out of Phillip Rivers. I also do think Matt Ryan's arm is a little better than what Phillip was at the time that he was here. So it's not an easy comparison, but I think there are some similarities to what Frank Reich and this offense did with Phillip Rivers in 19 that this team can try to do here in 2022 that might help speed everything up. It might also give the offensive line a little bit more confidence. It might give Matt Ryan some more confidence. And this wide receiver group, they're looking for confidence. Tight ends, everybody wants to feel like you're a big part of everything. And if you're catching passes and you're moving the football, it builds some momentum. It builds confidence. And I think that's the key. If they can start getting into a little bit more rhythm, you might see this offense start to uptick a little bit.
All right. And you mentioned his name, Matt Ryan. Let's talk about him. He completed 26 out of 41 passes for 251 yards and two interceptions. Give me your thoughts on Matt and his performance in this game.
Yeah, so Matt Ryan, he's been up and down. There's no denying that. He's had his struggles. I mean, it wasn't an offensive clinic that we saw on Thursday, that's for sure. But the one thing that we did see, that we've continued to see through Matt Ryan's career, it's almost like when the fourth quarter gets there, it's a different guy. It's a different guy under center. And when he has the football and he has to go down and score, he's able to facilitate. He's able to get the offense to do that, and we saw that again. He had a game tying drive before overtime that he was able to get the offense out to get in position for a field goal that ultimately was the game winner. So another game-winning drive for Matt Ryan. It puts him sixth all-time in NFL history, past Brett Favre for the most on that. So, I mean, he's a guy. It's documented. We know what you have. When it's in crunch time, he is a gamer. He's got that clutch trait that everybody wants. Now, the biggest thing is trying to hone in on the first three quarters because we had two interceptions. He also fumbled the football twice. Both of those were recovered by the Colts. But right now, I mean, he's fumbled the football at an alarming rate. I mean, he's on path to actually set an NFL record for most fumbles by a quarterback. So that is an alarming number that they're trying to figure out. I think it all goes hand in hand. The struggles we've seen on the offensive line, if they can get all of that worked out, I think the product you're going to see of Matt Ryan is going to be a little bit more what we're seeing late in the games when, you know, all the stacks are against him and he's able to step up. I want to say that is the Matt Ryan we've all been waiting to see. We're just hoping that as we move forward, we can get a little bit more cohesion in the offense. And he can really start to hit his stride in those first three quarters instead of just the fourth and the overtimes.
I want to stay just with Matt for a moment. I know this is still a long season, but you said, Casey, he's been up and down so far. When do you think we're going to see Matty Ice? When do you think we're going to see Matt Ryan in MVP form? Do you think it all begins and ends with how well the offensive line plays?
I think that's a big part of it. I think part of it is him, though. I think you can't just say that the struggles have been on everybody else. I think you have to hold him accountable for the issues that we've seen. The thing that I know this is, you know, it's always glass half full. I go back to what we saw during OTAs and then what we saw throughout the month of August at training camp. Matt Ryan looked every bit of a guy who had plenty left in the tank, guy who was – I honestly, early in the, you know, during training camp, someone asked me what I felt, and I felt like, honestly, this seems very reminiscent of what the Rams did with Matthew Stafford. I thought Matthew Stafford looked great last year, led the Rams to a Super Bowl, and honestly, I thought Matt Ryan looked that good that, hey, this is a guy that can elevate everybody on his team and make them play at a higher level and get to ultimately where you want to go. And I thought, especially in the AFC South, where it was a wide-open division, still is. I mean, we're just 5 weeks in. There's a lot that can still happen. And I thought the Colts could take care of the division that I felt was regressing with the Titans trading A.J. Brown, the Jags and the Texans. You know, they're young. They're trying to establish themselves. But, you know, you don't really know what you have in those two teams yet. So I thought Matt Ryan was going to be that guy to kind of take this team and do what Matthew Stafford did with the Rams. And like I said, there's only 5 weeks in. He could have a great rest of the season, and you look back and say, what a great year Matt Ryan had. I think that's still there. I think there's still a lot that Matt can prove, and Matty Ice can be in full effect. I think we're all just waiting. We're on the edge of our seat because there are instances where you go, wow, he's starting to heat up, he's looking good, and then you have a fumble. You have an interception, and it's almost like you take a step back. So I think we're all waiting to see it all come to fruition. But I will say that part of it, I think, is offensive line, but I do think part of it is definitely on him. It's a mental game, and I think we're going to start to see it kind of hit that stride and take that curve because he's been doing this for so long, and the track record is so good. I think at some point water finds its level, and I think we'll start seeing the Matt Ryan that everybody has seen throughout his career.
I want to ask you, how has he adjusted to Indianapolis from being in Atlanta? Has the adjustment been smooth in terms of a personal standpoint, in terms of him and his family being comfortable?
Right. No, from all indications, that is what we have heard. He's a very family-oriented guy, and you know, I'll be very, you know, very honest with you. When the first time I met Matt Ryan, I looked to the guys I was sitting next to, and I said, "All right, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I get it. This guy is an impressive human being." And he related Indianapolis a lot to Atlanta. He said that, you know, that Southern hospitality, a lot of people like to say there's a Hoosier hospitality in Indiana. And he said he felt that. He really feels not quite at home just yet, because when you spend 15 years in a city and then you move, it's hard to say that the new place is home. So I think they're still trying to get acquainted and adjusted to it. But I think for the most part, it's been a pretty smooth transition. I know that this fan base really circled behind him. They were all in. They really, really were excited about the addition of Matt Ryan. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't any red flags. It was a guy that, from everybody's accounts, everybody thought he was a great leader, a great teammate, and a great quarterback. And he's been a very great community guy. He loves it here, from all accounts. So I would say the transition's been pretty good. I'm sure it would look a lot better if the Colts were out there at 5-0 and all of that. But I think it's something that it's definitely a work in progress. But right now, I think all signs are pointing to everything has been pretty solid from his standpoint.
All right. I want to move along now to head coach Frank Reich. And currently this is his fifth season at the helm of the head coach of the Colts. Well, the Colts record currently stands at 2-2-1. How would you rate his coaching so far in this season?
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at the record, it all falls on the head coach. That is, you know, that's the world we live in with sports. You know how it goes. I mean, if you're not winning, it's typically the guy at the top, he's the one that gets all the blame, and he gets little success when it's successful. You know, everybody else gets the praise, and he doesn't get it. So I think right now there have been a handful of struggles, but it's hard to really, in my eyes, it's really hard to blame the coaching, because there's been a handful of just unforeseen mistakes that you just don't expect and you don't typically see out of this Colts team under Frank Reich. We have seen the fumbles at an alarming rate, and this is something that this team has always been so good at. They rarely cough up the football, and they have coughed up the football a lot. We're seeing just not necessarily a ton of penalties, but the penalties are coming in really pivotal moments. A lot of third downs, you know, where you're behind, you know, the opposing team is behind the sticks, and then a third down penalty, it just crushes you, adds a, you know, another drive and all that. So it's hard. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's on the coaching. There's been a handful of times where, you know, Frank Reich, he's aggressive. So there's been a handful of fourth down calls throughout his career and definitely through this season that are head scratchers, but that's just kind of comes with the territory. He's all about analytics and he's aggressive. So it's kind of you get what you get with Frank Reich. I don't know if necessarily I'm looking at this 2-2-1 record and saying, well, if it wasn't Frank Reich, somebody else would have this team at X. I think this team is performing right where they are based on the play on the field. I don't think it has too much to do with the coaching that we have seen. Frank Reich is a player's coach. These guys, they would run through the wall for Frank. So I'm not at all worried about, you know, that he's not getting the guys to perform to the level that they wanted to. I just think right now they're just having you know, they always talk about the football bounces weird because it's not a, you know, perfectly circle ball. Right now, the ball's just bouncing the other way, and I'm just waiting for it to kind of bounce the right way for the Colts, because I think when it does, Frank Reich is a guy that he is very well thought of throughout the league as one of the best play callers in the NFL, and I think that is still the case. I think once he gets the ball in better situations for him, you'll start to see that excel, and I think you'll start to see this team really kind of take another step.
The NFL is all about quarterback and coach relationships. We're seeing it in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. We're seeing it in Buffalo with Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, just to name a few. I know that Frank Reich had a relationship with Carson Wentz when they were together in Philadelphia, Reich being the offensive coordinator. What's the relationship like currently with Coach Reich and Matt Ryan?
No, it's a really good one. And the thing that it's been a lot from what Matt has talked about, which is interesting. For Matt Ryan, this is the first time that his head coach has been a former quarterback. So their minds work very similar. And I think on that, and also Marcus Brady, who is the Colts offensive coordinator, he's a former quarterback. So they've got a lot of quarterback minds within the offensive framework. And I think for that, it's been a great transition for Matt to Frank, because they both, not only are they both about the same height, they're both about 6'4", so they both see eye to eye, but they also see the game the same way. So I really think that has been maybe the biggest step in the positive way for this relationship. And it's one of the things that Matt Ryan talked about when Atlanta flirted with the option of Deshaun Watson in Atlanta, it kind of opened the door for Matt Ryan to look elsewhere. And he mentioned that he had a conversation with Frank Reich, Marcus Brady, talking just about the offense here in Indianapolis. And he said that they talked for 2 hours, and he was very comfortable in Atlanta. But after the conversation, he said he looked over at his wife and she goes, "We're moving, aren't we?" And it was like he just knew there was something there that he was – not necessarily he knew he was missing, but that he was missing. So I think the relationship between Frank Reich and Matt Ryan is very, very strong. Now, I don't know if you can compare them between Frank's and Carson's, because, you know, Frank was with Carson for a couple years. He was one of the guys that went and scouted him at his pro day, and they've had a lot of, you know, very personal relationships between he and Carson Wentz. But right now, the professional relationship between Matt Ryan and Frank Reich is definitely very high.
All right, and let's now move along now to the Week 6 matchup with the Indianapolis Colts going up against their division rival in the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Casey, let's start off with the Colts' defense. They're going to be going up against a quarterback who is expected to light the NFL up for the next decade or so, and that's Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor's played pretty well so far in this early part of the NFL season. What do you think are going to be the keys to victory for the Colts defense to stop Trevor and the Jaguar offense?
Oh, that's a really good question, because Trevor Lawrence has looked really good. And if you look at his games against the Colts, he has really excelled in his games against the Colts. I mean, he's completing passes almost at 75%. He's, you know, his quarterback rating is so high compared to where he is against everybody else. So he's kind of had the Colts number in his early career here, and you're right. He has looked very, very good this year. I think the additions that Jacksonville made were great for his skill set. You know, it's nothing flashy. It's get playmakers the football in their hands and let them do the work. And that's what we saw in that Week 2 matchup. The Colts went down to Jacksonville, a place where it's been well documented. They have not won in Jacksonville since 2014. And that continued this year. They lost 24-0. They were shut out. And it was Trevor Lawrence's show. I mean, he looked great in that Week 2 matchup. Now, what I always like to say when you're taking on a team twice in a year, that second game, both teams are going in completely different directions than what they were before. The Colts were coming off a really embarrassing tie against Houston. The Jags lost their Week 1 opener, so there was, you know, kind of an influx of both. They were both kind of eager to get out there, and Jacksonville just looked like a team that wanted it more in Week 2. The way it sits here for Week 6, Jacksonville, they've lost 2 in a row, and they've also turned the ball over 7 times in the last 2 games. For the Colts, their offense hasn't been great, but their defense has been playing very, very well. So I think right now, the way it looks, as far as teams are trending. The Colts defense is looking like they're trending in the right direction, taking on Trevor Lawrence. But it is one of those things you talk about. It's a division rival. Jacksonville always gets up to play against the Colts. And Jacksonville is still very much inside this divisional race. I know we're only five weeks in. The last handful of years, you know, week five, Jacksonville might have already been 0-5 and been done. So this is a little bit of different waters that they're treading in here this year in 2022. And Trevor Lawrence, he's the guy that he has a lot of weapons at his disposal, and also he offers a lot of weapons. He's got a good arm. He's also got the ability to be mobile and get outside the pocket and do things. He's not quite Josh Allen, but he's still an athletic quarterback. So there's a lot of things that give you a little bit of pause when you're trying to prepare for this team. So this Colts defense, they've got a pretty good matchup ahead of them on Sunday, but I know that, you know, they're hungry. They lost 24-0. They were embarrassed down in Jacksonville. This time they get them at their own house and at Lucas Oil Stadium here in Indianapolis. And I know they're kind of licking their chops, ready to kind of show them that week two, that wasn't the defense they wanted to put out on the field. And same with the offense. They're looking to really kickstart things. So it's going to be a good matchup. I'm really excited to see what Trevor Lawrence looks like here again in week six. And I'm excited to see what, you know, this Gus Bradley defense with guys like Yannick Ngakoue, Stephon Gilmore, DeForest Buckner, Kenny Moore. I want to see what they look like in the second matchup against Trevor Lawrence.
All right, let's move over to the other side of the ball. The Colts offense, Matt Ryan, and we talked about the other offensive players on that squad with the likes of Michael Pittman Jr., also Alec Pierce and Deion Jackson. What do you think are going to be the keys to victory for the Colts offense to get points against the Jaguars defense?
Yeah, that's a good one, because the Jaguars defense is very, very refined. I mean, Josh Allen is a force on the edge. And he has proven that in his games against the Colts. It's almost like these are the games that, for him, it means a little bit more. I'm not sure why he takes it out on the Colts, but he seems to really get up for the games against the Colts. We've seen, you know, Trayvon Walker, the first overall pick, he's looked pretty good. In the first matchup, Devin Lloyd, their other first-round pick, the linebacker, he had probably the best game that we have seen he's had through 5 weeks. So it's one of those things that defensive front for Jacksonville is very stout. We'll be anxious to see what happens with Jonathan Taylor. He missed last week with the ankle injury. Not sure, you know, how he's trending. We'll find that out later on Wednesday. But, you know, that's a big thing. I think if the Colts can get Jonathan Taylor back, that definitely opens up the passing game more. But we did see, as we mentioned earlier, you know, Phillip Lindsay and Deion Jackson looked very good on Thursday Night Football in Denver. So, you know, hopefully that is still enough of a rushing threat that Jacksonville can't just, you know, pin their ears back and get after Matt Ryan. But I also think we talk back to the week two matchup. The Colts went into that game without Michael Pittman and without Alec Pierce. So for the Colts, their two best weapons as far as, you know, as receivers go on the outside, they've got them healthy for this game. So that is definitely something that's going to be a change from that first matchup. And, you know, that's got to bode well for the Colts because, you know, frankly, Jacksonville hasn't seen either of those guys in the makeup of the football this year. So that is one thing for the Colts. They have an advantage. And if Jonathan Taylor can get back to healthy, that's also another advantage. We'll just have to see how well the offensive line plays. It's kind of been the MO of this team the last handful of weeks is how well is your offensive line playing? But because a lot of people have said that however the offensive line plays, that's how well the team is going to play. So if the offensive line can play better, I think this team's going to have definitely a better output from an offensive standpoint than what we saw in week two. But I think the key is to just convert third downs. That is so important, and that is one thing this team has struggled with early, and they really struggled in week two. I want to say they only converted two third downs in that week two game. So that is definitely a big point of emphasis for this team as they prepare for the Jags here in Indianapolis.
And you heard it from him. He is Casey Vallier. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Casey, thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Just tell everybody where they can find you on social media as well as the Indianapolis Colts and any websites. Let them know that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, once again, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Anytime you need to join, you need a guest, I'm always willing and able to happy to join you for sure. You can find me. I'm at C Vallier Colts on Twitter. That is C-V-A-L-L-I-E-R Colts on Twitter. And then you can find me all over the Colts.com. We have a weekly podcast we do. We do a Behind Enemy Lines, a Know Your Foe, if you will, every week. You can find all of that on the Colts Audio Network. We've got podcasts, radio shows, press conferences, all of that stuff right there at Colts.com, or you can download the Colts mobile app.
Before I let you go, Casey, I wanted to ask you, I know tailgating and just food as a whole is a part of this event experience, and the NFL is no exception to the rule. So when you do have time to go to Colts games, what are some of the foods that you enjoy eating at a Colts game?
Oh, I love this. Okay, so I'm a sucker for, you know, I'm not probably as versed as some people when it comes to food, but I am like a sucker for like a walking taco or a loaded nacho. Like for me, there's nothing better than you got the chili, you got the cheese. It's a little messy, but I'm all for that. And you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, a nice ice cold beer watching a game, I can't complain with those. So both of those are probably right where I am going whenever I'm hitting up, you know, the concession stand at a football game for sure.
Can you explain to the listeners what consists of a walking taco and how is it prepared?
Yeah, so a walking taco for me, which this is what it was growing up. I think it's changed throughout time, but essentially it's you got a bag of Fritos. And inside the bag of Fritos, you put everything you would put in a typical taco. So you've got your meat, you've got your lettuce, you've got your sour cream, you got your tomatoes, you got your cheese. I throw some hot sauce in there. You kind of crinkle it all up. You get a fork and you just there's nothing better than a walking taco. I will go to the grave talking about walking tacos. That's for sure.
Oh, wow, awesome! And can you explain to the listeners what's involved in a loaded nachos and how it's prepared, or how do you like it served?
Yeah, so my loaded nacho, it's very similar to the walking taco, only instead of the Fritos, it's just the tortilla chip. So I'm not a big red meat guy, so I really like turkey meat. You get turkey meat, you put some of that with some, you know, you might even get, you know, some sort of salsa and some, you know, some nacho cheese with some meat. And throw all that on there, some guacamole, some sour cream, that stuff. Wow, you're making me hungry now. That's what you're doing.
Both the walking taco and the loaded nachos sound delicious. And one more time, Casey, tell everybody where they can find you on social media as well as the Indianapolis Colts and the website.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's C Vallier Colts, and that is C-V-A-L-L-I-E-R Colts, and that's on Twitter. And then you can find all of the stuff that we do on Colts.com, the Colts mobile app. We've got the Colts Audio Network that's involved there, and everything that we do as far as radio shows, press conferences, podcasts, all of that stuff, that can be found on the Colts Audio Network on the Colts mobile app or Colts.com.
Awesome. And you heard it from him. He is Casey Vallier. He is the coordinator of radio production and the in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Casey, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. If ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. And anytime, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Play action. Time. Wide open inside the 30 goes Jerry Jeudy. Gilmore's on Sutton this time. Keep it on the ground and getting spilled.
Oh, where a lot of people thought he should roll out.
Yeah.
You know what happened? Fourth and one.
Surveys, good protection, slides, fires, broken up in the end zone. Gilmore on Sutton. So the defensive player of the year a couple of years back, and somehow, some way, the Indianapolis Colts, who took their first lead of the game on that field goal, pull out a 12-9 victory.
Businesses need to think beyond today. That's why ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions to help your business find more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people. Business today looks nothing like it did yesterday. While it's more unpredictable, its possibilities are endless. At ADP, turning unpredictability into an advantage is what we do. Using data-driven insights, we design HR solutions to help businesses work better, smarter, so they can think beyond today and find even more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code EASY1000 and your first wager is risk-free up to $1,000. BetMGM features a wide variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, and daily boosted odds specials. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Sign up today and find out why nothing beats a win at the King of Sportsbooks. Download the BetMGM app or go to BetMGM.com and enter code EASY1000 and place your first wager risk-free. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Louisiana only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in partnership with Sam's Town Shreveport Casino.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Come here.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Come here.
Natural Balance presents a head-tilting, tail-wagging audio experience made for dogs.
Want to play?
Good dog.
This ad was scientifically designed to make your dog happy. Just like Natural Balance dog food. Visit naturalbalanceinc.com to learn more.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org. So, darling, you're not a millionaire. If you want to retire at St. James Place in Baton Rouge, well, you don't have to be to live the active, enriching, and fun retirement you've planned and saved for. So forget what you've heard and take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more and schedule a visit at stjamesplaceinfo.org. That's stjamesplaceinfo.org.
Business today looks nothing like it did yesterday. While it's more unpredictable, its possibilities are endless. At ADP, turning unpredictability into an advantage is what we do. Using data-driven insights, we design HR solutions to help businesses work better, smarter, so they can think beyond today and find even more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.
Everybody, welcome back to the program. Once again, a big special thank you to Casey Vallier, coordinator of radio production and in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Again, a big special thank you to Casey for giving us the insights on what's currently going on with the Indianapolis Colts. All right, let's do this. Let's get to week six in the National Football League. Thursday night football between the Washington Commanders going up against the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field in the Windy City of Chicago. First off, let's start with the Bears. tough loss in week 5 to divisional rival in the NFC North, the Minnesota Vikings, losing by a touchdown, and the Commanders losing a tough one at FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland, to the Tennessee Titans. All week long, it's been a controversy where Ron Rivera made some discouraging comments about quarterback Carson Wentz. He later apologized. We don't know how the apology is going to go over into this game, if this is going to be water under the bridge and they'll move on and focus on Chicago. One thing is for certain, that Washington's offense is certainly better than Chicago. They've got more weapons. Of course, I mentioned earlier with the quarterback Carson Wentz. Also, Brian Robinson Jr. came back last week after suffering terrible injuries in the shooting that had taken place during the offseason. Also, you've got Antonio Gibson and then J.D. McKissic, who's a nice combo back, both on the running and the receiving side of things, as for the wide receivers. You can't forget about Scary Terry. Terry McLaurin, who's very solid. Curtis Samuel's been good so far this year for Washington. And on the defensive side, you've got Cole Holcomb, also Montez Sweat. That's just to name a few. Of course, Benjamin St. Juice, also Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen. As for the Bears, again, offensively, they're still trying to find their way. Justin Fields is a mobile quarterback. Again, he doesn't wow you in terms of numbers, but he got the job done last week against Minnesota despite the loss. David Montgomery can only get you so much. He had a touchdown in last week's game. So if you know the Chicago Bears MO, you know it's running game and defense. They're going to have more than just running game and defense if they're going to have a chance to beat the Washington Commanders. But anyway, that's the Thursday night football game at Soldier Field in Chicago. Both teams losing their games. Both teams are very prideful franchises. They've got a lot riding on this game. Still very early in this 2022 NFL season. Washington is in a tough place right now in the NFC East when you have the New York Giants, who are definitely at the peak of their powers right now. The Giants are 4-1. Dallas is playing well right now. Philadelphia remains the only undefeated team in the National Football League. So Washington, they've got a lot of pressure on them, so they've got to get things going. And as far as Chicago is concerned, being in that NFC North, you know, Green Bay is still the toast of the town when it comes to that division in the NFC North. And then Detroit is struggling. And then you've got Minnesota that's been playing very well as of late. So it's a must-win game for both of these franchises very early on in the year. And we have them on Thursday night football at Soldier Field in Chicago between the Washington Commanders and the Chicago Bears. The next most important game for week 6 will be the Baltimore Ravens going up against the New York Giants. First for the G-Men, a big win over the Green Bay Packers as a part of the NFL International Series in London last week. How about Saquon Barkley? Saquon Barkley is definitely a candidate for the league comeback player of the year. You know about the story with his injuries, tearing an ACL, having hamstring injuries, just been battling with injuries for the first 4 years of his career. This is his fifth year, the final year of his rookie contract. So Saquon is definitely making the most of this opportunity if he wants to remain in New York and be with the Giants for the long haul. Daniel Jones, again, doing what Daniel Jones does best. You know, Daniel Jones is like a Timex watch. He takes a licking. He takes a lot of lickings, but he just keeps on ticking, being solid in the win over Green Bay. And, of course, Darius Slayton did his part as well. What a job that Brian Daboll has done with the New York Giants. He's definitely a candidate early in the year for the Head Coach of the Year award. As for the Baltimore Ravens, a big win last Sunday night, beating the Cincinnati Bengals. We know about Lamar Jackson coming into this season, having a contract dispute, couldn't get a new deal. But Lamar is showing why he's an early candidate for the league MVP, not just doing this thing with his arm, but also with his athletic ability as well. Mark Andrews having a nice season so far this year, clearly developing himself as one of the top tight ends in the league. And, of course, when you think of Baltimore, the first thing you think about is defense. Patrick Queen, Marcus Peters, also Josh Bynes and Marlon Humphrey. And, of course, the recent acquisition of Jason Pierre-Paul. Jason wound up getting a sack in the game last Sunday night against the Bengals. So this is going to be a great game at the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. between the Baltimore Ravens and the New York Giants. The next most important game for Week 6 will be the Cincinnati Bengals going up against the New Orleans Saints. When you think of Cincinnati, there's already New Orleans ties. First for, as I mentioned earlier, for the Bengals and New Orleans ties. The wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase, coming home to New Orleans. Chase is a native of the West Bank of the city of New Orleans, and Chase played his college ball at LSU in Baton Rouge. So Baton Rouge is an hour and 20 minutes away from New Orleans. Joe Burrow, not a New Orleans native, but spent a lot of time with Ja'Marr in going back and forth to New Orleans. And, of course, Joe, him and Ja'Marr were members of the LSU National Championship team, and they won that title in New Orleans. So Joe and Ja'Marr with the New Orleans ties, and this is definitely going to be an interesting game as we have the Bengals going up against the Saints. So Cincinnati losing a tough one last Sunday night to their division rival Baltimore Ravens. As for the New Orleans Saints, they are riding a high with a big win over the Seattle Seahawks. How about Taysom Hill? Taysom came in, handled his business, did what he needed to do. I mean, in the role that he played, and again, having over 100 yards rushing to go along with 3 rushing touchdowns, Alvin Kamara seemed to be in top form for this game. The Saints are depleted again at the wide receiver position. Chris Olave suffered a concussion in this game. He's going to be questionable for the game against Cincinnati, but this is definitely, as I mentioned earlier, a homecoming for the Bengals, particularly wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. Of course, being from the New Orleans area, winning a national championship for LSU in New Orleans, and Joe Burrow, of course, being a member of that LSU national championship team, both him and Ja'Marr with the college in Baton Rouge, which is an hour and 20 minutes away from New Orleans. So this should be a game filled with emotion, a game of fireworks as the Cincinnati Bengals take on the New Orleans Saints at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome down in the Crescent City. Next most important game for Week 6 is going to be the New York Jets going up against the Green Bay Packers. The New York Jets' big win over their AFC East rival, Miami Dolphins. The Jets are starting to get it going with Zach Wilson. He's been solid the last couple of weeks. Breece Hall has been running the ball very well, not just running the ball, but also catching the ball as well. Garrett Wilson's played nice along with Corey Davis. C.J. Mosley's been the head of that defense for the Jets along with Quan Alexander, also Jordan Whitehead and D.J. Reed, and Sauce Gardner got an interception in last week's game over the Dolphins. So while the Jets appear to be taking flight and riding high right now, they're going to have to take that momentum going to one of the most storied places in professional sports, Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Packers losing a tough game as part of the NFL International Series in London last week to the New York Giants. Aaron Rodgers, he's got a lot on his mind. I know he can't wait to get back home to Green Bay and make some things happen alongside hooking up with Aaron Jones and also A.J. Dillon being a complimentary back in the running game. Randall Cobb played nice in the game in London last week against the Giants, but they're going to need more from him. They're going to need more from Alan Lazard, Romeo Doubs, and those young receivers for the Green Bay Packers. The Jets are definitely riding a high, and they've got a lot of momentum going into Green Bay, Wisconsin, but the Packers are going to not be embarrassed like that. And I know Aaron Rodgers is a proud man, and I know he's going to have something to say about that when the Jets come to Lambeau Field as the Jets and the Packers play one another. Next most important game for Week 6 will be the Arizona Cardinals going up against the Seattle Seahawks. For the Cardinals, tough loss last week to the Philadelphia Eagles. Kyler Murray doing what Kyler Murray does best, doing his thing with his arm and his athletic ability. But he's going to have to get more out of this running game with James Conner. Also, he's got to get more out of Hollywood Brown, also Rondell Moore, and the tight end Zach Ertz. As for the Seattle Seahawks losing a tough game last week in New Orleans to the New Orleans Saints, Geno Smith playing some great ball this early part of the year. Unfortunate news for Seattle, Rashad Penny out for the season with a leg injury, but Kenneth Walker III, the rookie out of Michigan State, had an effective game last week against New Orleans, and they're going to need not just a lot of Geno Smith, but also a lot of Kenneth Walker III. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, both of those gentlemen doing what they do best, playing well. So this is going to be a lot of offense in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle between the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks. Again, very early in the year for us to have a divisional game in the NFC West between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. We waited almost a year for this, but it's finally here. The Buffalo Bills squaring off against the Kansas City Chiefs. Buffalo was on a tear last week, just not just beating, but humiliating the Pittsburgh Steelers. 4 touchdown passes for Josh Allen. Hey, I talk about Lamar Jackson and make the case for Jalen Hurts as well for being early MVP candidates early on in the regular season. Put Josh Allen in the mix as well. Also, you've got the receiver Stephon Diggs doing what he does best. Gabe Davis doing what he does best as well. Also, buffing solid as well. They played great last week against Pittsburgh. The Kansas City Chiefs on an emotional high, beating the Las Vegas Raiders in a very tight game on Monday night. Patrick Mahomes, 4 touchdown passes. Travis Kelce had caught all 4 of those touchdown passes as well. Also getting contributions from Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Mecole Hardman, and also Juju Smith-Schuster. Defensively, not the strong suit for Kansas City, but the best player on their team from a defensive standpoint is Chris Jones. And then also you've got Frank Clark in the mix as well. You can't forget about Lajarius Sneed and also Nick Bolton. I'll get more into this game a little bit later, but man, Bills Chiefs at Arrowhead is going to be one heck of a game. The Sunday night football game that we have is between the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. First for Dallas, Cooper Rush has been solid, and he's been undefeated so far since Dak Prescott has been injured. Since replacing him in week 1. So Rush has played solid. Rush has been a great game manager. How about Dallas's defense? Mike Parsons, man, Michael Parsons has just been on a tear, and he's definitely a candidate for the league defensive player of the year. I know it's still very early in the season, but give credit where credit is due. Micah has been balling. Also the likes of Dorrance Armstrong. Also Leighton Vander Esch has played well. DeMarcus Lawrence, Malik Hooker. These guys have been effective. So while we have Cooper Rush just keeping the seat warm whenever Dak comes back, running game's been solid with the combination of Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. So while Dallas is doing their thing, being solid on offense and just being explosive on the defensive side, for the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, again, I mentioned Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen being MVP candidates so early in the regular season, put Jalen Hurts in the mix as well, getting it done with his arm and his athletic ability. He scored 2 rushing touchdowns in the Eagles' win last week over the Arizona Cardinals. Also, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, you know what type of pedigree they're all about. And can't forget about their tight end, Dallas Goedert. 8 catches for 95 yards last week against the Cardinals. Solid defensive play from Philly. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, he was big in last week's win over the Cardinals. Also, Darius Big Play Slay. Also, Javon Hargrave, Josh Sweat. These guys, Philly's defense has been solid so far this early part of the year. And when you have a fierce rivalry like Dallas and Philly, and the game's going to be played in Philadelphia on a Sunday night, oh my goodness, man, it is going to be fireworks. It's going to be a lot of hits. And I think this is a time for Jalen Hurts. Jalen is going to shine big in this game, even against the tough Dallas defense. I think Philly's going to come on late in the game and get points. But, man, Dallas and Philly, this is about as good as it gets, especially early in the season where we're getting these big games. It's an NFC East rivalry game. Cowboys and Eagles is going to be a lot of fun. And then we have the Monday night game between the Denver Broncos and the Los Angeles Chargers. First for the Chargers. The Chargers won a close game beating the Cleveland Browns 30-28 thanks to Browns rookie kicker Cade York missing the potential game-winning field goal. Chargers, it seems that Justin Herbert is back from the injury. He threw the ball pretty hard, threw it pretty effectively. It seems that his ribs are not giving him problems anymore. How about Mike Williams? Mike Williams had a fantastic game against Cleveland. Also, Austin Eckler doing what Austin does best, running and catching. We can't forget about the defensive side where you have Derwin James, also Asante Samuel Jr., J.C. Jackson. Also, you have Kenneth Murray, Khalil Mack doing their part. They're just trying to – the Chargers are trying to hold down the defensive side while they wait for Joey Bosa to come back from a groin injury. So while Joey is resting up, the Chargers seem to be getting back in top form. So while the Chargers are trying to get back in top form, the Broncos are looking for top form on the offensive side. We saw what happened last Thursday night when the Broncos losing to the Indianapolis Colts in overtime. Russell Wilson and that offense, they've got to get it together. So much expectations for them this year. They haven't gotten it going. This is the game where they need to get it going. Again, it's still early in this 2022 NFL season, and this is a division rivalry game in the AFC West. If you know about the Broncos and the Chargers, these two teams go way back since the days of the AFL. And Russell Wilson, if he needs a bounce-back game, this has to be the bounce-back game for him, because if the Broncos don't get it going, there's going to be a lot of questions that are going to be asked, including Russell signing that big, giving Russell that, offering Russell that big contract extension before the season even started. There's going to be a lot of questions in that management with John Elway and the rest in that front office. But Monday night on the West Coast in Inglewood, California, the Denver Broncos going up against the Los Angeles Chargers. You've got Russell Wilson going up against Justin Herbert, and also two teams with solid defenses. Running games are solid. It's going to be a great one with the Broncos and Chargers on Monday night. Now it's time for my game of the week. My game of the week is going to be the Buffalo Bills going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. The all-time series with the Bills and the Chiefs, Buffalo leads the all-time series 27-20-1. Buffalo has 27 wins. 27-24-1. Buffalo's won 27 games. Kansas City has won 24 games, and there's been one tie. All of this includes the five times that they played each other in the playoffs. And when you think about the playoffs, of course, everybody thinks about January 23rd of 2022 in the AFC divisional playoff game between the Bills and the Chiefs. The Chiefs would win in overtime 42-36. But you have to remember, before Kelce scored the game-winning touchdown in overtime, 13 seconds, it was 13 seconds after the, well, actually what happened was 13 seconds was the amount of time that Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs on that 44-yard drive, including Tyreek Hill, who is no longer a member of the Chiefs, now playing for the Miami Dolphins. But 13 seconds left was all that Patrick Mahomes needed to get the Chiefs on a 44-yard drive. They got Harrison Butker in field goal range. They forced the overtime, and we know the rest is history. Mahomes to Kelce, end zone, touchdown. Chiefs win. And what we also saw, not only these two teams playing so well, but most importantly, we got a chance to see two quarterbacks, two masters at work. We had an opportunity to see the future of the NFL, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. I think the next 10 to 15 years are going to be very exciting, not just in the AFC, but in the NFL. Both of these quarterbacks put up some monster numbers in this game. In the divisional playoff game, Patrick Mahomes completed 33 out of 44 passes for 378 yards and three touchdown passes, while Josh Allen completed 27 out of 37 passes for 329 yards and four touchdown passes. So, again, we know about the supporting cast that was on that team during that period of time. I mentioned Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, the list goes on and on. But this was all about the two quarterbacks on that day with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. And it's going to be about Allen and Mahomes in this game at Arrowhead Stadium. So this is the long-awaited rematch. This is what everybody's been waiting for since January 23rd of 2022. The rematch is going to be very exciting. The last playoff game was very exciting. And I think this one in week six is going to live up to the hype and then some. The way Buffalo has played so far this year, the way Kansas City is picking up their game this year, This is just ripe for the picking with the Bills and the Chiefs, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, the future of the NFL, not just at the quarterback position, but just for just play as a whole. The Buffalo Bills going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, my game of the week. All right, before we get on out of here, I'm going to give you my picks on who I think will win Week 6 most important games in the NFL. Thursday night football, the Washington Commanders going up against the Chicago Bears. I like the Commanders to beat the Bears. The Baltimore Ravens going up against the New York Giants. I like the Baltimore Ravens to win that game. The Cincinnati Bengals squaring off against the New Orleans Saints. I like the Bengals to win that one. The New York Jets going up against the Green Bay Packers. I like Aaron Rodgers and the Packers to bounce back in this game. The Arizona Cardinals going up against the Seattle Seahawks. I like Seattle to beat Arizona. The Buffalo Bills going up against the Kansas City Chiefs in my game of the week. I think it's going to be a highly contested game, but I like the Kansas City Chiefs to win that game. Sunday night football, the Dallas Cowboys going up against the Philadelphia Eagles. I like Philadelphia to remain undefeated and to fly high. And Monday night, the Denver Broncos going up against the Los Angeles Chargers. I like the Chargers to beat the Broncos. So my picks for Week 6's most important NFL games, I like Washington, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Green Bay, Seattle, Kansas City, Philadelphia, and the LA Chargers. And there you have it. And again, once again, a big special thank you to all of you, the listeners out there, for tuning in to this edition of the program. Once again, a big special thank you to Casey Vallier, coordinator of radio production and in-game studio host for the Indianapolis Colts Radio Network. Again, a big special thank you to him for giving us the current insights of what's going on with the Indianapolis Colts. Until next week, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson saying so long, and you've been listening to the League Wraparound.
Not a millionaire, darling. To retire at St. James Place, you don't have to be. Take a look at St. James Place. It just might be more affordable than you think. Learn more at stjamesplaceinfo.org.
I'm in an area called trade integration at Pioneer. Why? Because there's big news. The Enlist E3 trait is now integrated with Pioneer's own exclusive and elite genetics. They're called Pioneer Brand A-Series Enlist E3 soybeans, and they're like no other. I'm in a test plot near Portageville, Missouri that's dedicated to new Pioneer brand A-Series Enlist E3 soybeans. Row to row, it looks impressive. But what's more impressive is what you can't see with the naked eye. Exclusive and elite Pioneer genetics. And the performance makes it anything but a regular Enlist E3 soybean. From field to lab, Pioneer brand A-Series Enlist E3 soybeans are like no other. I'm here for Pioneer Brand Seeds, a block away from another ag company's corporate office. This company concentrates their breeders here, in one centralized location. That's not how Pioneer works. Our breeders are located where their test plots are. That way, Pioneer corn breeders gain insights about what does and doesn't work for a local geography in real time. Ask your local Pioneer sales representative about field-proven Pioneer brand corn hybrids. And like our breeders, they're located near you. Where can you plant Pioneer brand Qrome products? Just about everywhere. Your most productive acres? Yes. Your toughest? Yes. Dry soil? Wet soil? Clay soil? Sandy soil? Yes, 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 and you bet. Top of the hill? Side of the hill? Bottom of the hill? Over the hill? All the above. There's a Pioneer brand Qrome product for corn that can meet or exceed your yield goal on every acre. Pioneer brand Qrome products. Field proven and ready for yours.
The greater the risk, the greater the reward, or so the saying goes. But if you're a farmer like me, you'd much rather have your rewards without the risk. Well, thankfully, with True Choice, you can save up to 10% on hundreds of the leading crop protection products from Corteva Agriscience. And the best part, no strings attached, no hassle, no hoops to jump through. Just a better way to buy crop protection products. If you're tired of risky rewards programs, see what you're missing at corteva.us/truechoice.
Where can you plant Pioneer brand Qrome products for top yield potential under corn rootworm pressure? Just about everywhere. With a more extensive lineup than ever before for corn, Pioneer brand Qrome products are field proven and ready for yours.
The greater the risk, the greater the reward. Or so the saying goes. But if you're a farmer like me, you'd much rather have your rewards without the risk. Well, thankfully, with True Choice, you can save up to 10% on hundreds of the leading crop protection products from Corteva Agriscience. And the best part, no strings attached, no hassle, no hoops to jump through. Just a better way to buy crop protection products. If you're tired of risky rewards programs, see what you're missing at corteva.us/truechoice.